So one Bengali poet came to Jagannath Puri. He was an acquaintance of Bhagavan Acharya, and he wrote some drama, he wrote some poetry, so he started to recite them to Bhagavan Acharya. And Bhagavan Acharya was very impressed, and other devotees also were quite impressed by hearing his drama and poetry. And they thought that it would be, and those dramas were apparently glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those poetry was glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the devotees thought that they should take this writings to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and made him hear that, because they thought that that would please him very much. But it was a custom that whatever was presented to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was first presented to Sarup Damodar Goswami. Sarup Damodar Goswami was an expert in Rasa Shastra. He was an expert in the art of writing, and he was also an expert in the depth of devotional principles. So although everyone was very impressed to read the writings of that Bengali poet, but when it was taken to Sarup Damodar, Sarup Damodar became very upset, because this person made a difference. Although he compared Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Lord Jagannath, but he made a difference that he described Lord Jagannath as non-moving Supreme Personality of Godhead and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the moving Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so Sarup Damodar Goswami pointed that out, and he chastised him that, and here he is pointing out that your writing has been contaminated by, you cannot distinguish the difference between Mayavad and Vaishnav philosophy. The Mayavad philosophy is to consider, Mayavad philosophy considers that the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the Absolute Truth is impersonal. He is without any form, he is without any quality, he is without any potency, and he is without any variegatedness. So ultimately everything is Brahman. But the Vaishnava philosophy is very different. Vaishnava philosophy deals with three aspects of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Brahman aspect, which is the bodily effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Paramatma, the Supersoul aspect of the Lord, in which form he is present in everyone's heart, and Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is endowed with six opulences, and he is one without a second. He is the Supreme. Supreme means no one is equal to him and no one is superior to him. And this Vaishnava philosophy is actually the real Vedic understanding. It is not that Vaishnavas have their understanding and the impersonalists have their understanding, that they develop two different understandings due to their difference of sect, due to being two different sects. No, Vaishnava understanding is a real understanding of the Vedas. The Vaishnava understanding is the perfect understanding of the essence of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. Or Vaishnava understanding has been presented in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, the real understanding. But impersonalism is one aspect of the spiritual understanding, and that is called Brahma Bad. But Shankaracharya came and he introduced a new philosophy. And that is called Mayavad. There is a difference between Brahmavad and Mayavad. The Brahmavad is positive impersonalism. It's one aspect of understanding of the spiritual reality, which is impersonal from that point of view. But Mayavad is a new introduction by Shankaracharya. The Brahmavad is a Vedic understanding. Like, there were many Brahmavadis who later on became devotees. Like, the four Kumars were Brahmavadis, impersonalists at the beginning. But then they became devotees. Even Sukhdev Goswami at the beginning, he was an impersonalist, but then he became a devotee, Vaishnav. So that is one aspect of understanding, which is, this theory is presented by Vyasadev himself, which is called Brahma Parinambad. In simple words, it would be the transformation, the theory of transformation. Brahma Parinambad. Parinam means transformation. The Brahman has transformed into Jagat. So that is a Vedic understanding. But Shankaracharya introduced something new. And he himself admitted that. In Vishnu Puran, it has been mentioned, Lord Shiva is telling Parvati, Mayavadam Ashat Chastram Prachanna Bodham Uchyate Mayoibo Bihitang Devi Kalo Brahmana Murtina. In the age of Kali, appearing in a Brahman as a Brahmana, Brahmana Murtina, I will introduce a temporary theory, temporary conclusion of the Vedas. Mayavadam Ashat Chastram. Ashat, Shat means permanent, eternal, and Ashat means temporary. Ashat can also mean unbona fide. Ashat can also mean contaminated. So Lord Shiva is admitting himself that I will introduce a philosophy which is Prachanna Bodham Uchyate, which is covered Buddhism. In the age of Kali, appearing as a Brahmana. So why it is covered Buddhism, that has been explained, that Lord Buddha, Krishna came as Buddha, and he introduced a new dharma and rejected the Vedas. He introduced a kind of dharma for the sake of preventing the animal slaughter that was going on in the name of Vedic ritual, in the name of Vedic sacrifice. Nindashi jagga viderahaha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashu ghatam keshavadhrita buddha sharira. Keshav, Krishna, appeared as Buddha in order to stop the animal sacrifice that was going on in the name of Yajna Vidhi, the practice of the sacrifice prescribed in the Vedas. And in order to do that, in order to stop the animal sacrifice, he had to reject the Vedas. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is describing the Bedna Maniya Bodho Hoilo Nastik. Since the Buddhists do not accept the Vedas, they are atheistic. They are atheists. Because they do not accept the Vedas, therefore they became atheists. So Buddhism is covered atheism, and Mayavad is covered Buddhism. So it means that Mayavad is a form of atheism that was presented in the name of the Vedic understanding. And why Shankaracharya had to do that? Because the Lord himself asked him to do that. He rejected the Vedas. Actually, Buddha didn't reject the Vedas. Buddha did not touch the Vedas. Buddha's presentation was that dharma is to follow the ten principles. The ten principles, one can say, in the mode of goodness. Speak the truth, don't hurt anybody, don't harm anybody, thou shalt not kill, and so forth. Interesting, like Buddha gave 10 commandments, and Moses also received 10 commandments from God. So, but his 10 commandments are quite similar. But the thing is that this is specifically establishing the principle of non-violence. And he just said that this is the ten principles of dharma. And the goal, and when you follow these 10 principles, then you'll be situated in the path of dharma, and then ultimately you will achieve nirvana. The goal of life is to achieve nirvana, and nirvana means to become nothing. And the understanding is, because of our existence in the material nature, we are suffering. So if we become non-existent, then there won't be any suffering. But already, cultured, educated, intelligent, thoughtful people became quite disgusted with what was going on in the name of the Vedic scriptures. Because the brahmanas, actually some demons took birth in the brahmana families in the age of Kali. And in the name of practicing the Vedic principles, in the name of following the Vedas, they introduced all kinds of undesirable activities. Like one is animal sacrifice. And so what was going on in the name of the Vedas was quite repulsive to thoughtful, intelligent class of people. So when Buddha came with this understanding and propagated this policy, this theory of dharma, then those people accepted that. And then due to the patronage of the kings like King Ashok, it spread all over India and went out of India. It went spread even out of India, like Sri Lanka. It went all the way up to Tibet, China, Japan, due to his patronage. So at that time, the whole of India became, practically, the whole of India became Buddhists. But the Buddhists did not accept the Vedas. So, and if one doesn't accept the Vedas, he won't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaishcha sarvair ahameva vedda. The only way to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is through the Vedas. Now, if somebody doesn't accept the Vedas, he won't understand the Supreme Lord. Therefore, he will be a Gnostic. So it has been pointed out, Ved-na-manya, because the Buddhists, since the Buddhists do not accept the Vedas, they became Gnostics. They became atheists. Therefore, there was a need to re-establish the Vedas. Buddha disregarded the Vedas, and the Vedas, Vedic supremacy, or the supremacy of the Vedic wisdom, was lost practically. Therefore, Buddha told Shankaracharya to come and re-establish the Vedas. Or rather, he told Lord Shiva to come and re-establish the Vedas. And he, appearing as Shankaracharya, he did that. And it's interesting to note how he did that. Like, Buddhists, they established or they accepted the principle that Nirvana is the ultimate goal of life. And Nirvana means to become nothing. So Shankaracharya came and he raised an argument that you all are saying that Nirvana means to become nothing, but Nirvana is actually a concept from the Vedas. Nirvana is a Vedic concept. And Nirvana, according to the Vedas, is not becoming nothing, but it means to become one with the ultimate absolute. So in this way, he challenged them. Now, Shankaracharya had to come up with a new philosophy. new Siddhanta. Because otherwise the Buddhists won't accept it. So Vedas clearly mentions about these three features of the Absolute. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdati. So in order to avoid that challenge that, well, your Vedas are completely different from what we follow, so we don't have to accept your Vedas. So in order to defeat them, Shankaracharya came up with this theory that the personal feature of the Lord is imaginary. And the ultimate absolute is Brahman. And everything is a transformation. Everything is coming from Brahma. Brahma is the reality, the truth. And this material manifestation, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nithai Ki Jai. So the Brahman, the Absolute, is devoid of form, devoid of, devoid of potency, nirakar, nishaktik, nirvishesh, with devoid of variegatedness. So this Brahman is the ultimate absolute truth. And this material nature is an illusion. Now here is the difference between, as I was saying, there is the positive impersonalism and negative impersonalism. Brahmavad and Mayavad. The Brahmavad is a theory of transformation. Brahman was transformed into Jagat. Brahman transformed into matter, Jagat. And beyond that, this Jagat is a transformation of Brahman, but when you go beyond Brahman, then we come across two other aspects of the Absolute Truth. One is the Paramatma aspect, and the other is the Bhagavan aspect. And both are personal. Both have their personal features. The Paramatma is an inactive aspect of the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead. And Bhagavan aspect is his personal, reciprocating aspect with his devotees. That is his absolute, ultimate absolute feature. In that feature, he is all attractive. And he is endowed with all the potency, and especially he is endowed with six opulences. Those six opulences, the word Bhagavan literally means the personality who is endowed with six opulences. Those six opulences are absolute wealth, absolute strength, absolute beauty, absolute fame, absolute wisdom, and absolute renunciation. Now, who is that personality who is endowed with all these? Is there anybody? No. But the Vedas are saying, yes, there is somebody. Who is not present in this material nature, but he is the origin of everything, shelter of everything, and the source of everything. He is situated in the transcendental reality beyond this material nature. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is without a second, who is the ultimate absolute personality of Godhead. No one is equal to him, and no one is superior to him. So that is the Vedic understanding. So, like, initially one may understand him as the impersonal Brahman, but transcending that aspect, when he goes beyond that Brahman realization, he will come across his Paramatma understanding. He will come across his Paramatma feature, and then beyond Paramatma feature, he will understand his Bhagavan feature. And this is the result of three different stages of spiritual advancement. Like through jnana, when one makes the approach to understand the ultimate absolute reality, ultimate absolute truth, through jnana, through the endeavor of knowledge, he sees him as Brahma Jyoti. When one internalizes himself through the process of Ashtanga Yoga and achieves his ultimate perfection, he sees him as the super soul in the core of his heart. And then when one surrenders himself unto him and renders loving devotional service to him, then he sees him as Bhagavan. And this Bhagavan feature of that Supreme Personality is the original, actual identity of that personality. So this way, Brahmabad, like as I mentioned earlier, like through Brahmabad, through this positive approach of impersonalism, one can gradually come to the stage of developing one's loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and see him as Bhagavan. But Shankaracharya developed another theory that is called Vivartavad, or the theory of illusion. It's not there, but it appears to be there. Like Brahma Satya and Jagat is mitha, it's illusory. It is not there, but it appears to be there. The variety in this material nature appears to be there, but it's due to illusion. And when the illusion will be dispelled, then one will see him as impersonal Brahman. So that is Shankaracharya's Vivartavad. And Shankaracharya took a few secondary statements from the Vedas and established his theory. The statements like Sarvam Khallidam Brahma, everything is Brahman. Then Tattamasi, you are that. Shetaketu, from statement from Upanishad, that you are that Brahman. So you are Brahman, and Brahman is impersonal, therefore you are impersonal. Ultimately, everything is devoid of form and variety and potency. But he did it. Shankaracharya had to do that in order to re-establish the Vedas. And he did re-establish the Vedas. He drove out Buddhism from India. Like at a time when the whole of India was under the grip of Buddhism, Shankaracharya single-handedly drove Buddhism out of India. And that's why in today's India we rarely see any Buddhism. So, very expertly he has achieved that mission which was assigned to him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But this was, as he himself said, Ashat Shastram. It is a temporary conclusion of the Vedas. Because then this understanding will be removed and the Vedas will be re-established in its full glory. And in order to do that, Ramanujacharya came, Madhvacharya came and confirmed, re-established the Vedic concept in its perfect understanding, in perfect conclusion. That is, personalism was re-established. Ramanujacharya did it very wonderfully, very expertly. He defeated Shankaracharya's theories. And to mention a few, like Shankaracharya established the theory of Mayavad, giving some examples like the way we mistake mirage to be water. It's an illusion. Just as there is no water in the mirage, but it appears to be water. Actually, it's hot sand, burning hot sand, but it appears to be water. Or as one mistakes a rope to be a snake, similarly, this jagat is mitha or illusory. It appears to be, but actually it is not. And when that illusion will be over, then we will see that everything is Brahman. But Ramanujacharya came up with some very wonderful arguments, and just to name a few, like he defeated this concept that the concept of illusion. It is not there, but it appears to be there. There is no water in the mirage, but it appears to be water. So Ramanujacharya raised the argument that fine, there is no water in the mirage, but somewhere the water is existing. That's why we mistake the mirage to be water. So variety may not be there in this nature. The variety of this nature may not be real, but somewhere the real object is existing. That's why we are mistaking this to be that. There may not be snake in the water, in the rope, but somewhere the snake is existing. That's why you're mistaking the rope to be a snake. So in this way, he established above Shankaracharya's Kevaladvaitavad, the non-dual, absolute non-dual, Kevala Advaitavad, non-dualism. He established his Vishishtadvaitavad, the very specific non-dualism. And the variety of this material nature actually is a reflection of the spiritual variety. But the spiritual nature is different from material nature. That the entire spiritual sky is spiritual, therefore it is Brahman. But in Brahman, in that non-dual absolute, there is variety. From the material perspective, when we see the spiritual reality, it will appear to be, yes, spiritual, pure spiritual reality. It is spiritual. Everything there is spiritual. But inside that spiritual reality, there is variety. There is spiritual variety. And then Madhvacharya came and he further reinforced this concept of dualism. The material nature and spiritual nature, they are two different nature altogether. And the material nature is a reflection of the spiritual reality. So whatever is there in the reflection must be existing in the reality. Otherwise, how the reflection will be there? In the reflection, when we see green leaves, red flowers and yellow fruits, we have to understand that in actual tree there are green leaves, there are red flowers and yellow fruits. That's why we are in the reflection, we are seeing them. The real thing may not be there in the reflection, but somewhere the reality is existing, and that reality is transcendental to the material nature. But as a result of that, there was a problem, there was a conflict, an endless conflict between the impersonalists and the personalists, the Shaivites and Vaishnavites. Shankaracharya's followers were generally followers of Lord Shiva, Shaivites. These impersonalists, Mayavadis, are basically Shaivites. So so there was a conflict, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu harmonized that conflict in a most wonderful way through his Achinta Bheda Bhed Tattva. To begin with, it is Achinta. It is beyond our sense perception, beyond even our thoughts, beyond even our intellect. Achinta. And the definition of Achinta is Achinta khalu je bhava na tang starkena jojayet. Prakritibha pare jastu tad achintasya lakshanam. The Achinta, first of all, Achinta khalu je bhava, that is Achinta, beyond our sense perception, cannot be established through arguments and logic. Natang starkena jojayet. And Achintasya lakshanam, the symptom, or the symptom of Achinta is, it is beyond this material nature. Prakriti bhapari. That is beyond this material nature, that is Achinta. So beyond this material nature, there is another reality, the spiritual reality. But that reality is beyond our sense perception. Therefore, we cannot establish that reality by arguments and logic. The only way to understand that is through the Shrauta Pantha, by hearing from an authoritative source, bona fide source. That knowledge is coming down from that reality down to this reality, this nature. And this is another thing that the Vaishnava philosophy understands or establishes, that the Jagat is not mitha, Jagat is not false, Jagat is also real. But it is real as a reflection. The real reality is covered, but it is existing in another form, and that is real. It is very much real that we all are here. We cannot say that it is all mitha. We all are here. When something happens, we cannot say that it's... When something happens to us, we cannot say it's not happening to us. When there is no food in the stomach, we can't say Jagat mitha. So, we have to understand that we are in a reality that is not absolute reality, but it's a relative reality. The relative reality, because we are identifying ourselves with the material body. Although we are spiritual beings, but we are by mistake identifying ourselves with this material body. That is what is the illusion. Not the illusion, that is what the reflection, or like a dream. Like we are dreaming of something. Now, when we are dreaming, it is real, it is there. In a dream, when a tiger comes and pounces upon us, we scream. It's real. As a dream, it is real. But when you wake up, then you see that it was a dream. So similarly, our existence in this material nature is like a dream. Now, the difference is that this difference about this dream and that dream, our one is a individual dream and this is a collective dream. When I see in a dream that a tiger is pouncing on me and I scream, that dream only I am seeing by myself. But when something happens in this room, all who are present in this room will experience that same dream. So that is the difference. This is a collective dream. Whoever is present at certain time and certain space will go through the same experience, although he will experience it from his own perspective. And eventually, what is this dream? This dream is the dream of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is lying in Yoga Nidra, and we all are projected into material nature. The way Mahavishnu is glancing towards the material nature and the way we are getting tuned up to that, we are seeing it from that perspective. But when we get tuned up to Mahavishnu, then we will have a totally different understanding. Then we will see that it is actually happening due to Mahavishnu's glance. And since Mahavishnu is absolute truth, Mahavishnu's glance is also absolute truth. It's not mitha, it's not false. Everything relative to absolute is absolute. Anything related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is absolute. His glance to the material nature is absolute. So whatever is happening to this material nature is absolute. We cannot say that it is mitha. So that is another way Ramanujacharya smashed Shankaracharya's theory. There are many other ways he actually smashed. He starts with the thing that if God is a man's creation, then what's the use of worshipping that God? If a man is a product of God, man's imagination, the forms are imaginary, then why worship? Better don't bother about him at all. And this is how he starts off. That, and do we accept the absolute as a controller, as a proprietor, as the creator? Then how can that be non-intelligent, impersonal being? The person who created this must be an intelligent being. The person who is maintaining it in such a wonderful way must be an intelligent being. So what is the source of that intelligence? The source of intelligence must be a person. And he is the absolute spiritual personality. Anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu harmonized this through this conflict between the impersonalists and Vaishnavas through his Achinta Bheda Vedtattva. We found many of those Mayavadis, staunch followers of Sri Shankaracharya, became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. To begin with, one of the first ones that became converted was Sarvam Bhattacharya. Sarvam Bhattacharya was the most brilliant Vedanta scholar, most brilliant exponent of Vedanta philosophy. I mean, he was worshipped all over. He was recognized and worshipped all over India at that time. He was the crest jewel of all the Mayavadis. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just transformed him. He became a devotee. And when this news spread that Sarvam Bhattacharya became a Vaishnav, became a devotee of the Lord, became a personalist, the impersonalist world, Mayavadis, became very, very upset. They're very angry. And that is why when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Benares, and that was the seat of the Mayavadis, Prakashananda Saraswati was the leader of the sannyasis. He was the leader of 64,000 sannyasis in Benares. And Benares, Kashi, is the place of Lord Shiva, therefore it was the seat of the Mayavadis. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were very, very insulting to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prakashananda Saraswati used to openly criticize Mahaprabhu when he arrived, when he was in Benares. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu transformed him. And all 64,000 Mayavadis became devotees. So this is the potency of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and this is the potency of this, of his teachings. If we properly present this philosophy, and if the other person is willing to listen carefully, then he is bound to become convinced. There is no other way. We cannot deny the authenticity of the presentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achinta Bheda Vedtattva, which is actually the essence of the Vedic philosophy. So anyway, and the point is that at that time many, many people were affected by Mayavad philosophy, as this particular poet. And it was so subtle. Sometimes this presentation of the Mayavadis can be so subtle that common people cannot actually understand. Like, for example, recently I just came across one statement. I don't know how, I may be wrong, but it came to me. And somebody was telling me that Tulsidas' Ramayana, apparently Tulsidas appears to be a great devotee. And he's a great devotee of Lord Ram. But this person was telling me that Tulsidas actually mentioned in his Ramcharitmanas that if one goes and takes bath in Rameshwaram, then he achieves Sajuja Mukti. So why should... And that person, she was a lady actually. She took the thread from one of our classes, and she mentioned that if Sajuja Mukti is given to the demons, then why should a devotee aspire for Sajuja Mukti? That's a very, very valid point. Like, Sajuja Mukti is given to the demons who are killed by the Lord. So why should a devotee want something that is given to the demons? Of course, I mean, I couldn't tell her. I didn't want to start criticizing Tulsidas at that time. My point actually was that please show it to me. I haven't read Ramcharitmanas. I don't know what Tulsidas has said. But this way I can see, if it is true, then we can, it confirms, like, Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually mentioned that Tulsidas is a sentimentalist, is a Mayavadi sentimentalist. His devotion to Ramchandra is not a real devotion. Like if he thinks that ultimately Ramchandra is impersonal, then what's the question of devotion to Ramchandra? Anyway, like the thing is that the point that I'm trying to make here is sometimes this presentation of these Mayavadis are so subtle. Out of sentiment, they display a lot of love and emotion and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But ultimately, it's all Brahman. So that ultimate consideration is the most important consideration. What is your ultimate understanding? Do you accept him as the ultimate absolute personality or not? Do you accept that his form is Satchidananda, made of eternity, knowledge and bliss? His form is eternal. And we all have a loving relationship with him. We all are his parts and parcels. So that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that's the real understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here also, although the devotees, can you imagine, Mahaprabhu's associates are considering that it's a great presentation. What a wonderful glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Sarup Damodar, when he read it, he said, this is all nonsense. It's all nonsense, you're a Mayavadi. So that is Sarup Damodar's perception. He just exposed him right there. And then he pointed out, Jaho Bhagavat Paro Bhagavato Sthane. Go and study Bhagavat from a devotee Bhagavat. And that is the way to understand Bhagavat. That's the way to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless and until we approach a devotee, unless and until we receive the mercy of a devotee, we cannot possibly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so this is how Sarup Damodar exposed this person. And he was a humble person. He accepted Sarup Damodar's chastisement. He accepted it and he became a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that is the nice thing. Although he was contaminated by this Mayavad misconception, but when he was exposed to the proper understanding, he accepted it. And Sarup Damodar pointed out that although you have actually misrepresented Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's identity by thinking that Lord Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are two different personalities, that one is unmoving Supreme Personality and the other is the moving Supreme Personality, as if there are two different personalities, one is moving and the other is static. No, Jagannath is not static. Jagannath is not non-moving. Jagannath can move. Jagannath, whenever he wants, he goes out. He goes out and he does all kinds of wonderful things. Like, he goes and steals jackfruit from the tree. And when the farmer chases him, he runs. This is how Lord Jagannath is Achal. Lord Jagannath is not Achal, not non-moving. Lord Jagannath is moving. It's your problem that you can't see his movement with your damn... I'm sorry. with your unfortunate blindness. So it's our problem that our vision is contaminated by this conditioned nature of this material platform. But when our eyes become purified, then with our transcendental spiritualized vision, we'll be able to see how the Lord is moving, how Lord reciprocates. And there are so many wonderful examples, like Sakshi Gopal walked all the way from Vrindavan to Vidyanagar, South India. From North India, he walked all the way to South India. just to give a witness to his devotee. And the devotee's logic was, when Jagannath told him that, look, I am a vigraha, I am a murti, how can I move? And his argument was, if you can talk, you can jolly well move. If you can talk, you can walk. And that faith of the devotee compelled Jagannath to walk all the way to Vidyanagar. It is the faith of a devotee that compels Gopinath to steal kheer. Kheer chor Gopinath. And not only steal it, hide it. And it is out of his devotion when he appeared to the devotee Pujari in a dream. The Pujari didn't think that, well, it was just a dream, and didn't turn around and go to sleep. He immediately woke up, took bath, went to the temple, and he found that, yes, the pot was there. He kept it in such a wonderful way behind his cloth, behind his dhoti, that no one saw it. And he told that, look, when Gopinath appeared to him, to the Pujari, and told him that, look, there is this Madhavendra Puri. I kept some kheer for him, so you go and give it to him. So Pujari's response was, well, all the kheer has been distributed last night. There's nothing left. And Gopinath said, no, I kept one pot aside. Where was that? Just, you know, it's behind my dhoti, under my dhoti, covered by my dhoti. And he went there and he found that the pot of kheer was there. And he went and announced to the marketplace, which is completely empty at night, that Madhavendra called out to Madhavendra Puri and narrated the whole incidents to him. So this is how the Lord reciprocates with his devotee's devotion. And it's our misfortune that we cannot see how he is the Supreme Personality. He's a personality, he's not a statue. So, in this way, the Lord reciprocates with his devotees. And when we are chastised by the devotees for our mistake and accept the chastisement with the right spirit, we only make spiritual advancement. And Sharabdhamanda pointed out that although you have, out of your ignorance, described him in a certain way, but ultimately, Saraswati has actually glorified the Lord through your misconception. So Saraswati has his way of glorifying the Lord. So that will be discussed in the next class, whoever gives the class, in the next few verses. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari.